From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty with the news on this day in Maine, Friday, November 22nd, 2019.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by the Dempsey Center, making life better for people managing the impact of cancer. Locations in Lewiston and South Portland, dempseycenter.org, and by Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens, presenting Gardens Aglow, where visitors will see the gardens in a whole new light, now through December 31st, mainegardens.org.
28 asylum seekers from about 8 families arrived this morning in Portland from Texas. The city manager said yesterday it's not clear how many more might be arriving, but that the numbers are unlikely to match those who arrived in the city from the southern border this past summer. State investigators are declining to file charges or pursue further action in response to allegations of workers mishandling fish at a Cook Aquaculture salmon hatchery in Bingham. Rob B. Feinberg has more.
The state's Department of Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry launched its investigation earlier this year after the animal rights group Compassion Over Killing filed a complaint, which included undercover video footage from the hatchery. It appears to show workers slamming fish, throwing them long distances, and leaving them in buckets to die. In its report, investigators say they met with company officials about the complaint and visited the facility to ensure that workers were properly retrained on proper fish health and safe handling. A department official says the case was closed after investigators felt assured that the hatchery was committed to making improvements and had followed through on them. The department is also planning a follow-up visit in December. Meanwhile, the animal rights group Compassion Over Killing says it's disappointed with the outcome of the complaint and is still looking at, quote, other enforcement opportunities. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Robbie Feinberg.
And the language is changing on Maine driver's licenses that don't comply with the Federal Real ID Act. As of July 1st, Mainers have had the option of obtaining driver's licenses and state ID cards that comply with the Federal ID Act, which requires more documentation, or getting licenses that are not compliant. As required by federal law, these cards have to contain language indicating they do not comply.
The initial language that we had on there was not for real ID purposes.
Secretary of State spokesperson Christian Musinski says some people who have tried to use these licenses for things like buying alcohol or at the bank have had problems because the language seemed to indicate the IDs weren't real. As of today, the disclaimer now reads, not intended for federal purposes. Licenses with the older language are still valid. Looking at the weather tonight, snow ending in the mountains, clearing everywhere but the far north with lows tonight in the mid-teens to the mid-20s. Tomorrow, partly sunny to partly cloudy and breezy with highs in the high 20s to mid-40s. Republican state senators in Kennebec, Somerset, and Lincoln counties have been targeted with mailers saying that they oppose equal pay for equal work. The GOP lawmakers say the messaging isn't true, but the group distributing the mailers says it's just trying to educate voters about the pay equity issue. Mal Leary has more.
The mailers points to individual senators by name, saying that they, quoting now, voted with corporate special interests by opposing equal pay for equal work. Whitney Parrish is with the Maine Women's Lobby Education Fund, which is behind the messaging campaign.
It's not necessarily targeting candidates or races, but it is bringing visibility to those votes and how our elected officials do vote, and hopefully, you know, empowering voters with that information.
I want to be crystal clear that I don't think a pay gap is acceptable.
One of the senators named in the mailings is Republican Matt Pouliot of Augusta, who insists that he's fully in favor of pay equity.
If this were a bill on, you know, whether or not we should have a pay gap in Maine, and we could push yes to eliminate the pay gap, I'd be the first one to push the yes button.
Instead, Pouliot says the mailings cite a measure he opposed earlier this year that bans employers from asking a job applicant about his or her past salary. Parrish acknowledges that the measure in question does not affect equal pay for equal work, but
It is a piece of the puzzle. It's a piece that can hopefully start to close the wage gap if discrimination that women have experienced in the workplace doesn't follow them.
Pouliot says both state and federal laws already require equal pay for equal work, and that more must be done to enforce them. But he says that will require a bipartisan legislative effort, which is made more difficult when these kinds of targeted mailers are being distributed well before the next election.
When these types of attacks are sent out, whether they're a year in advance or in a campaign cycle, they do nothing to help build the trust that is necessary for us to focus on real policy solutions to improve the state.
It is unusual to see issue mailers being distributed a year before the general election, since all or some of the incumbent senators may decide not to seek re-election or could lose in a primary. But given the hundreds of thousands of dollars in TV ads that are already targeting congressional candidates, it's likely that more mailers aimed at legislative candidates will emerge in the months ahead. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
And the surge in vaping among teens has alarmed many parents, pediatricians, and teachers. Though the chemical of primary concern linked to reported illnesses and deaths has been identified as vitamin E acetate, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control says none of these devices are safe because they contain nicotine and other harmful chemicals. And as Patty White reports, even when a young person does decide to quit, it can be hard to do.
Noah, who doesn't want to share his last name, says he first dabbled with vaping while in middle school. He says he started out with non-nicotine vapes. Then in high school, he tried one with nicotine.
And it was like, yeah, I need one of these because the rush was just, it felt so good.
But now, at age 18, Noah says e-cigarettes sometimes make him feel sick.
It's like my lungs hurt and my stomach is upside down, and it's weird. It's a weird feeling. I'll go to like hit the Juul or whatever, and it's like I can't even inhale it because it's just like my body's rejecting it because I feel so sick from it.
Vaping doesn't feel good, Noah says, but stopping doesn't either. When he tries to quit, he's irritable and can't sleep. Even nicotine patches don't help. He's not sure what to try next.
I've tried so many times and I failed every single time, so I wouldn't know what to tell anybody.
It's a puzzle that pediatricians, substance use counselors, and others who work with teens are also wrestling with. In Brunswick in mid-October, local teachers, counselors, school officials, and staff from Midcoast Hospital met to figure out how to help students understand the risks of e-cigarettes and connect them to help. The hospital's director of substance abuse prevention, Melissa Focasato, opened the session.
The expectation is not that any one of us is going to solve this. We're all going to be rowing in the same direction. This is a community issue.
Midcoast Hospital recently established a new text line for teens to make an appointment with a counselor. The hospital's also setting up cessation support groups for teens. But some pediatricians say they aren't sure how to advise young patients.
You feel like you're walking in the fog trying to help youth.
Dr. Deborah Hagler, a pediatrician at Midcoast, says this public health issue has emerged so quickly, it's unclear what the most effective strategies are. While e-cigarettes share the same addictive substance as regular cigarettes, Hagler says other factors can drive dependence in young users, such as behavioral cues.
In an adult, you might have your cigarette at a bar at the same time in the same place. With kids using their nicotine in an e-cigarette, you don't know what the behavioral patterns are. Are they the same? Are they going to be amenable to other interventions as, say, traditional combustible cigarettes and sort of the environmental cues? We think so, but we don't know.
Hagler serves as the president of the Maine chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics, which is collaborating with public health officials and others across the state to identify effective treatment options. Dr. Nirav Shah, the director of the Maine Center for Disease Control, says strategies for quitting e-cigarettes are complicated by the fact that some contain as much nicotine as an entire pack of regular cigarettes.
The questions that are out there is that because individuals using e-cigarettes are taking in so much nicotine, for example, how many lozenges should someone need in order to start moving away from e-cigarette use? We generally know what that answer is for regular cigarettes, but what is it for e-cigarettes? The same thing with patches, the same thing with gum. That's an area that a lot of researchers are focusing on right now.
Shah says the state has seen an uptick this fall in calls about vaping to its tobacco helpline, but they're mostly coming from concerned parents and schools, not from teens themselves. And Vicki Wigman, the substance use prevention counselor for the Lewiston School Department, says many students remain skeptical about the risks of e-cigarettes. Her education strategy has been to spread information wherever she can, in classes, in bathroom stalls, on school TVs, and to encourage students to use text-based apps that offer daily tips for quitting.
I have found over time that this age group doesn't love the traditional support group and sit and get education and let's all have a group goal and plan on something. They're much more covert in their actions, so I do think that's probably a best approach.
The ultimate goal, say public health officials, is to prevent kids from ever starting to vape. 20-year-old Jake Warren says that's the wisest course of action based on his own experience. Warren says he started vaping in high school for social reasons. In college, it became a stress reliever, and he didn't think it was affecting his health until he came home for Thanksgiving break his freshman year, and his dad asked him to play soccer.
I felt like crap. I mean, I barely could breathe, and it was only 2 weeks coming off, you know, a collegiate high-level D2 soccer experience, so I was pretty taken back by that and didn't really know what was going on.
Warren says he tried to quit cold turkey, then he tried to taper. He also used texting apps for quitting, but they didn't help curb his cravings. He tried nicotine lozenges and gum. He says he had the most success with the prescription medication Chantix, but the urge is still there.
I definitely still crave it, even now, months after, and I can't lie to say I don't get a rep here or there.
Warren considers himself lucky, though. He worries that as kids are starting to vape at an earlier age, they'll have a much taller mountain to climb.
It'll be hard for certain kids to really shake this, and it could be a long life thing for them.
For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Have a great weekend. I'm Nora Flaherty.